My name is Deborah Oseo-Pong, and my talk is entitled The Contribution of Bioinformatics to Evolutionary Thought. I've drawn a roadmap for you to take you through the talk. We'll begin with the history of evolutionary thought as it relates to common ancestry between chimpanzees and humans, and then I'll move into a demonstration of three databases, and these will give us information about three different arguments relating to common descent. I'd like to start off with this quote, which was published in a booklet in 2008 by the U.S. National Academy of Sciences. Evolution, which I'm defining here as evolution with common descent, is the reigning paradigm in today's science. Biological evolution is the central organizing principle of modern biology. Modern chimpanzees, other great apes, and humans are descended from a common ancestor that is now extinct. So the history of evolutionary thought with regards to common ancestry dates back to 1698, when the English anatomist Edward Tyson acquired the remains of a chimpanzee. He published his astonishment at the anatomical similarity between the two in an essay. In 1745, Mopper Twee published Venus Physique as an early attempt at a materialistic explanation of the world. Now, he didn't actually use the terms natural variation and selection. These were coined by Darwin, but his quotes very much speak to that concept. In 1790, Immanuel Kant wrote that the analogy of animal forms implies a common original type. So in 1859, 60 years after his grandfather posed the question of common ancestry, Charles Darwin published On the Origin of Species, and this quote is very famous, taken directly from that book. "Therefore, I should infer from analogy that probably all the organic beings which have ever lived on this earth have descended from some one primordial form into which life was first breathed." Since then, biologists have discovered that all life forms share the same fundamental biochemical organization. This is the central dogma in biology. Many of you are familiar with it. DNA is transcribed into RNA, which is translated into protein. And it's such similarities that have prompted bioinformaticians to meticulously compare sequences, pseudogenes, and repeated sequences in the genomes of humans and chimpanzees. So even more recently, the field of bioinformatics has begun to contribute to the search for answers. Bioinformatics is defined by Merriam-Webster's dictionary as the collection, classification, storage, and analysis of biochemical and biological information using computers. This especially applies to molecular genetics and genomics. A little bit of history about the field. In 2002, a group aligned 1.9 million nucleotides of chimpanzee DNA with the human genome. They found a difference of a mere 1.24%. A year later, in 2003, another group compared 4.97 million nucleotides of human DNA from chromosome 7 to the corresponding chimpanzee DNA, and they found that the sequences differed by 1.13%. Also in 2003, the publication of a rough draft of the chimpanzee genome provided even greater evidence for the similarity between the two. Now, we now know that this statistic is a matter of live debate, and it fluctuates regularly in the literature. In 2011, Tompkins found that the entire sequence differs by 86 to 89%, and his reasoning for that is that most studies that have previously been done eliminate the regions that contain gaps or don't align directly because a number of pre-screenings are done. So using bioinformatics, we can examine the arguments for and against common ancestry for ourselves. And as this is an informational talk, I will not draw conclusions about the strength of the data. So back to our roadmap, we've looked at the history of the evolutionary thought and then the contribution of bioinformatics to it. And I'd like to take us to our first example. We'll look at human chromosome 2 and a gene on that chromosome, PAX3, which is implicated in eye development. And to do this, we'll use Entrée and BLAST, and I'll take you through a tutorial of that. So human chromosome 2. The structure of human chromosome 2 resembles the structure one might see if chimpanzee chromosomes 2A and 2B were fused together. For those of you that don't know, chimpanzees have one more chromosomal pair than humans. They have 24 and we have 23. The difference is found in chromosome 2. Scientists accept that there's good evidence that chromosome 2 is composed of two fused chromosomes. Regardless of the plausibility of that fusion event, how similar are the genes on human chromosome 2 to those on chimpanzee chromosome 2B? As I said, PAX3 is a gene that belongs to the paired box family of transcription factors, and it's located on human chromosome 2 and chimpanzee chromosome 2B. It's associated with ear, eye, and facial development. I chose this gene because it's fairly common and conserved between all organisms with a complex eye. So we expect the sequences to be similar. In order to look at this, we'll use Entree BLAST. Entree is NCBI, National Center for Biotechnology Information's primary text search and retrieval system. It integrates the PubMed database of literature with 39 other databases that include DNA and protein sequences, structure, gene, genome, genetic variation, and gene expression information. And this is the home screen of Entree. How many of you are familiar with it? Okay, so a good number. So what I've done here is enter the scientific name of chimpanzee in the search box, Pantroglodytes, and I've already pressed go. So the screen that you're seeing contains a number of results in the left-hand column, which is what we'll be interested in. Next to genome, you'll see that there's one result. So if I click on that, this is the screen that pops up. This is general information about the chimpanzee genome, chromosomes, and then sequencing projects that have been done. Under tools, there's something called BLAST Genome. This is going to be the tool that will be useful to us. So if I click on that, it takes me to BLAST. Now, BLAST is a basic local alignment search tool. It finds regions of local similarity between sequences. The program itself compares nucleotide or protein sequences and calculates the statistical significance of the matches. This is the screen that comes from the BLAST genome. If you'll notice, we're in the Pantroglodytes nucleotide BLAST. There's a space for us to enter a query sequence. This is going to be the PAX3 gene that will align to the entire chimpanzee genome and see if we can find a match. In order to get that sequence, we have to go back to Entree and enter PAX3 in the search box. I've done that and pressed go, and I want you to notice that there are 233 results under protein. Now, BLAST is most useful at the protein level because there are changes in the nucleotide sequences that are not reflected in the protein level. So it's a way to narrow the criteria, and that's why we're going to use protein. So if I click on that, the first five results are the ones I want to concentrate on. The first one says partial. While it is a Homo sapiens protein, it's only 55 of the 80 amino acids that we want. The next three results are not Homo sapiens. So I've highlighted the fifth one for you. That is the entire 80 amino acids of the PAX3 gene in humans. So if I click on FASTA, it'll take me directly to the FASTA format sequence. Now, FASTA format is a text-based sequence that bioinformaticians use to represent the sequence using one letter. So each letter represents a single amino acid. This is the accession number. This is what we'll use to plug into that query sequence box. You can also paste the entire FASTA format sequence in, if you'll notice. I prefer to use the accession number just so you make sure you don't miss any letters. I pasted it in there, and then you can click BLAST. Now, what BLAST has done is align that protein sequence to the entire chimpanzee genome, and this is the screen that it gives you. This is a visual representation. Your query sequence is the bold red line, and subject sequences follow. Visually, you can tell that they are 100% match. If you scroll down, you can see that the query and the subject sequences are identical. It gives you your identities and your gaps, which in this case are 100 and 0%, and it gives you as well a visual alignment of those. Now, this confused me at first, but there are three lines because the line in the middle represents the changes. It's just another way to represent the amino acids that are different between the two sequences. Back to our roadmap, I've taken you through one example using Entree and BLAST. Now let's move on to our next database. The University of California in Santa Cruz puts out Genome Browser. And we'll look at this using PAX3 in order to give you a tutorial and a visual for the homepage. And then we'll look at our next example, which is the Gulap pseudogene. So Genome Browser is a site that contains the reference sequence and working draft assemblies for a large collection of genomes. The site itself actually allows you to scroll over and click on entire chromosomes and examine the annotations made by scientists worldwide. This is the home screen. Are any of you familiar with Genome Browser? Okay, not very many. So there are drop-down menus. What I want you to notice here is the drop-down menu under Genome. It goes all the way down to Wallaby and Platypus. I'm not sure why you'd want to use either of those. But there are a number of options using this. There's also a place for position or search term and gene. That means the chromosomal position or the gene that you're looking for. So what I've done here is enter PAX3. So So once you do that, you get a wealth of information. What I want you to notice is the track that I've highlighted in the green box. These are the mRNA transcripts of the PAX3 gene. I also want you to notice the chromosomal banding pattern across the top of the screen. Your position on the chromosome is marked with a red hash mark. So let's use this to look at the Gulab pseudogene. Darwinian scientists claim that much non-coding DNA is functionless junk that has accumulated many random mutations. Pseudogenes are an example of that. They're genes that have lost their protein coding ability and are often considered junk DNA. This is a quote from John C. Advise, who wrote Inside the Human Genome, A Case for Non-Intelligent Design. At face value, pseudogenes hardly seem like genomic features that would be designed by a wise engineer. Given the relative ease of origin of pseudogenes, their persistence in genomes is understandable in the light of evolutionary reasoning. So using Genome Browser, we can examine a gene that presumably encoded an oxidase enzyme in primates, which exists as a pseudogene in both humans and chimpanzees. So if I go back to Genome Browser and scroll down, I'm presented with the option to expand a number of different tracks. The track that's going to be useful for us is the primate chain track. I'd encourage you guys to play around with this on your own because, again, the site contains a wealth of information and I can't address all of it now. But if you have questions as to the tools and the content of the site, I'll do my best to answer that afterwards. Okay, so if I search the Gulab pseudogene in humans and then expand the primate chain track, this is what I get. So as you can see, there's chimp, orangutan, and a number of other primates. The one that's going to be important for us is the chimpanzee track. So I've clicked on that, and this is the screen that you get, located right below. It gives you the human position and the chimp position, as well as the size. Notice that they are both on chromosome 8, which is actually represented visually for you in the color yellow. They are also very similar in size. Then we can take that to BLAST. A BLAST comparison of the two sequences reveals a very high sequence similarity, though they're not identical. Wherever a hash mark is missing, the bases are different. I also want you to notice the grayed out and lowercase letters. Because BLAST is an algorithm, it eliminates sequences that appear to be non-random. So the first line that you see contains a repeated sequence that BLAST has eliminated based on that algorithm. So I've taken you through the two examples, and we've looked at all three databases. We'll look at one more example. It's an ALU sequence, which is a sign repeat, and we'll also use Genome Browser to do that. ALU sequences are mobile genetic elements that appear to insert into the genome at random. The vast majority of them are found in identical locations in the human and chimp genomes, and this strongly suggests that they were inserted in the common ancestor of chimps and humans before the lineages diverged. It's virtually the same argument as pseudogenes. So using Genome Browser, ALU sequence 2 is a sign that's located in the SPTLC2 gene in humans. So if I go back to that track section on the Genome Browser homepage, we can expand the repeat masker track. This is just going to allow us to see the different classifications of repeats in that gene. So what I've done is searched the gene in the human genome and expanded that repeat masker track. So this is the sign that we're looking for. It gives us a number of them, but I looked at this one just for example purposes. If I click on that, I get information about the sign itself. Class is sign, chromosomal position is highlighted for you, and if you click on that, you get a 10x version of the previous screen. This is just zoomed in 10 times. It gives you the sign very large. So what I've done now is take that exact same chromosomal position and search for it in chimps. This is the chimp genome, same chromosomal position, and notice that there is no sign present. There is, however, a line that we did not see in the human genome. So what I've shown here is that these ALU repeats, are not all conserved between the two species. In the new age of technology, bioinformatics has become the battleground of choice for evolutionary biologists. The field itself is a collaborative effort among scientists all over the globe, and it provides a wealth of information about comparative genomics. Countless blogs, articles, and papers have been published and made accessible on the internet to the most ordinary of people. And yet the plethora of genetic information about common ancestry is only just the beginning. I've taken you through three examples and three databases. Again, if you have questions, feel free to ask them, but I'd like to conclude with a list of databases that you might find useful. First of all, NCBI, which again stands for National Center of Biotechnology Information, puts out PubMed, which is a database of literature, Entree, and BLAST. Ensemble is a European version of NCBI. I actually like this database better because the user interface is much more friendly. It's much easier to use. And then University of California, Santa Cruz, Genome Browser. Again, a wealth of information is available on that site, and I'd encourage you to check it out for yourself. And I'd like to conclude with this quote by Graham Finley. Genetic mechanism in all its happenstance has produced the genetic basis of humanness. Genetics describes the process ordained and upheld by God to make the creature that expresses God's image and likeness. Are there any questions?
Before we start with questions, I'd just like to announce that Trevor was married just yesterday, so we'd like to congratulate her on that. And I believe your husband is also.
Mm-hmm.
Would you please stand? There you go, newly married. Awesome. Well, questions for Deborah here. If I can start on that, we have plenty of time. Any questions here?
I was wondering what area of research you personally are involved in and how you're applying these tools.
I am personally going into an immunology and infectious disease graduate program at Loyola University in Chicago, and I start next Tuesday. So we'll be moving out there tomorrow. But that's the area I'm going into. I just graduated college, Dort College in Sioux Center, Iowa, and I have a molecular biology degree from them. So I've been involved in the debate now for 4 years because of the nature of my education. And I took a bioinformatics class, and this was one of actually our projects that we did, looking at the arguments for common ancestry and how we can apply bioinformatics to that. So that's been really interesting. As with immunology, I'm not sure yet how I'll incorporate that.
Well, do you have any thoughts on pseudogenes? What are they about?
So the argument is that, if you break it down by diagram, which I thought about putting on here and didn't, and the idea is that the pseudogene was originally a protein-coding gene, and it lost its function before the lineages diverged in that common ancestor. And so, personally, I haven't examined the argument in detail for myself, but as far as what we'd expect to see if that were not the case, two straight lines in which it's very unlikely that the gene would have lost its protein-coding ability in separate lineages at around the same time. So that's what I'd like to say up to that right now.
What do you think are, or hope, are some of the things that might come out of bioinformatics in the next 5 years?
You know, bioinformatics is really big right now. It's very much expanding, and I think it's really important for scientists to understand how to use these databases. And so my hope with this talk was to start to introduce people, especially to Genome Browser, because it's such a great tool for examining comparative genomics. So I'm hoping that, what we saw with the history, and I mentioned that the numbers dropping as far as the similarity between the genomes of chimpanzees and humans. I'm hoping that some of that will be fleshed out more, and more studies will be done that are honest and compare the entire sequence. And the more rough drafts that are published and the more genomes that are uploaded to the internet, the more sequences that are uploaded to these databases, the more that'll come in handy and be really useful in examining some of those arguments.
Doing a project right now looking at flagellar proteins and trying to determine if there are homologs out there in biology to flagellar proteins. And I've been using just BLAST searches using the PubMed and protein database search engines, but which of the databases would you prefer to use for searching for homologous proteins for this kind of project? Which ones do you find easiest to use?
So I actually have a different suggestion for you, Casey, because we talked about this. But on Entree, there are a number of databases that are accessible from that site. DBVAR is one that I'm not too familiar with, but it's one that will be really useful for you. So I'd encourage you to check that out. You can look at copy number variants using that database. And then I know you've been using BLAST, but I would suggest that you play around with Genome Browser and see what you can get out of that.
Knowing next to nothing about what you talked about, I'm still curious about this being all genome-based, and the epigenome now is beginning to suggest that there is a lot more involved in protein expression than the old standard dogma. How much is this system likely to be displaced or augmented as we learn more about epigenome?
And you know, that's already been taking place. Also on the Entree website, there's an epigenomics database that is also accessible. I don't think, you know, I think that you're, that's part that's going to contribute to the argument quite a bit as we find out more about epigenomics and eliminate the concept of junk DNA. I think that's sort of where we're headed. You're welcome.
Thank you so much, Deborah. Next up, we have Paul Nelson. And his talk is, what is defined the topology of the genomic universe? And we are going to go through a transition.